Blog I don't know what that radio. Is.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
I'm real good, Don. With all the snow, let me just do this as a performer, if you will. Our condolences are going out to two individuals. Their funerals are this morning and this afternoon. The late Professor Emeritus Francine Chakolis, his services will start at 11 o'clock this morning. And at 2 o'clock, the beloved and legendary Ben Coleman, Minneapolis North University, Minnesota University of Maryland, MBA. I will be laid to rest. So we're seeing a lot of tragedies in our beloved Shanklemont. So I just wanted to do that. Dr. Francine Chakolis, Professor Emeritus, Augsburg College, and legendary Ben Coleman. Yeah, so this continues. But what do we have, Don? I understand we have guests right off the bat. I understand we got a little update after she gets through with regards to a major conflict between Mayor Melvin Carter and Jason Soule in St. Paul. Mr. Soule relieved of his responsibilities as an employee of the city of St. Paul, but we'll get into that. And we will identify a very heated letter, a very critical letter of Mayor Carter that was sent to one of the white TV stations. But go ahead. We have a guest from outside of Minnesota. Go ahead, Don.
Good morning and welcome, everyone. I also like to welcome those that are viewing this and listening to this via Facebook live stream. We appreciate having you here. And, again, the podcast is available after we get off the air. You can actually click the same link and listen to the podcast. It's going to be a great show. This morning I'd like to welcome Ms. Tanae Wells, a nonprofit leader, a business leader from the Twin Cities here, who happens, I caught her on vacation, and there's some questions and things I'd like to talk to her about this morning. Ms. Wells, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm not doing cold. Great. So, I know you're not cold. You're warm, and it's snowing here, and it's freezing. I just went outside to put the car in the garage, and there's a coat of snow all over it, so I wasn't too happy about that, but those things happen when we live in Minnesota. Let's get right into this. Mr. Edwards just got a message from Lewis King. He wants to tune in.
Okay, anyway. We're in America. This is not Russia. You can certainly do that, and we welcome him. But let's get on with our guests calling us from outside of Minnesota.
On vacation. Yeah, so we heard that in around October 2018 that the Worth Co-op in North Minneapolis was closing, and it's actually full titled the Worth Cooperative Grocery, and that article was in North News. And then we have further updates that their future is unclear. I know, Ms. Wells, we were having a short conversation about this, and you had a little insight into this model and maybe why it didn't work in North Minneapolis. Would you like to share that? And you can tell people a little bit about who you are also. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a class business model, and that is that business has to have the capacity in the form of a co-op of food and access to food and a business model that can work. And I think what happened what I believe happened is that we started from scratch. I think we start from a deficit base. We don't have people hired that know how to do that kind of thing, how to run a grocery store. And then we bring in a model for a cooperative, which is an expensive model. The thing that's really interesting, though, is long time ago, maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, I was working on a project with a developer, and we were trying to determine whether or not there was a feasibility for a cooperative in North Minneapolis. And what we found out is that a very significant number of 55411 and 55412 people belong to the Wedge Co-op on Lindale. And at that time, there were conversations with the Wedge Co-op about coming over on the north side. They were looking to expand, as Seward Co-op and some of the other Southside Co-ops have done already, gone into other neighborhoods. And when they came to North Minneapolis, there was the usual of you know, we don't want you over here, we want to do it ourselves, and yet we didn't have the capacity. And so what I think happened is, you know, again, you've got to wean people off of Cub, and you've got to wean people off of, it's a disgrace that we have. I think at that time I was doing some research, and for every 20,000 people in a community, you can sustain a grocery store. North Minneapolis, I think, has over 60,000 people, and we've only got one grocery store. Now, we've got peripheral grocery stores, and Hy-Vee just came in, and Robbinsdale, but Cub has been has not been too super friendly about other people coming in and starting grocery stores. There's been a couple of others that have been started by some other folks. But again, that business is one where you have to have access to food, and you have to have access to be able to get this business up and running. I was a member of the Word Co-op. I sent in however much money I was supposed to send in as a way of just supporting the neighborhood. But again, they didn't market. They didn't do the kinds of things that would attract business, and it's an expensive model, and it failed.
Okay. Now, with that said, what do you think are some of the significant factors in North Minneapolis on why this thing is going belly up? And do you know anything about the grocery upstairs up there on Weber Parkway? Have you heard anything about that? But you can answer those two.
I've heard they're struggling too. Again, I think the grocery business is monopolized in most areas, it's been difficult to wean people into a different model, even when it's healthier food and, you know, all those kinds of things. So I've heard that they're struggling too. I don't know that for sure. I know they've, when I was with Onyx Culinary Collective, I know some of my chefs, some of our chefs went up there and did some work up there. But those events that they had were not very well attended. So it's not a surprise, again, when you're undercapitalized and when you're trying to break into a market, you know, you've got to subsidize yourself, and either you've got to find a way to subsidize yourself, which would be, you know, you got to have a big investor with pockets that are willing to just sit there for the long haul, or an organization that can back you while you do that. And since we don't have either of those things, and we've attempted to do this pretty independently, you know, it's bound to fail.
So let me jump in there. Now, I guess first question, wasn't there a nonprofit collaborating with this group? Secondly, isn't this an ongoing kind of thing in our community, especially in North Minneapolis, where you have a group of these people that get together that have challenges in business acumen? Let me ask you those two questions.
Well, absolutely. I mean, again, it's difficult. I'm a social entrepreneur, as you know, and it's difficult to combine the social entrepreneur, the nonprofit, or the grant generating. It's difficult to amass enough capital in grant funding to really kick it off. I mean, you need an investor that's got big pockets. And there doesn't seem to be anybody in our sector that can do that.
Yeah. And on that point, I mean, we can look back not as far, but just a couple of years ago when Prince passed away. And there was no one in Minnesota, no organization in Minnesota that could come over there and actually capture Paisley Park, his estate, and help that function as a high upscale recording studio. And basically it's an amusement park that will now serve liquor at Paisley Park. And so that's pretty interesting that you say that. So what do you think, in closing here, what do you think is the future of these grocery stores and co-ops in North Minneapolis, and how can we fix it?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's a combination of things. I think first of all, we have a monopoly with Cub, and we're going to get a little bit of competition with Hy-Vee, who's pretty close on the north side. I can't remember the statistics, but a pretty significant amount of people in North Minneapolis don't have a car. And to be able to buy groceries, you have to go downtown and take a bus back, and vice versa. And I think according to some research I did, I think it was like an hour and a half trip both ways to buy groceries. And then, of course, you got to carry the groceries and put them on the bus and do all those kinds of things. So Hy-Vee, I think, is going to help that somewhat because Hy-Vee is going to be on the Broadway bus line. And Hy-Vee, although their prices are not as competitive as an Aldi's, which is also on the north side, which is captivating the low-income market in most communities. I think, you know, even Trader Joe's is cheaper than people realize. Their model of healthy food, organic food, all those kinds of foods are what we need in our community, and we've got to demand it in demand grocery stores. I actually think this is a city council problem. I think that, again, if you're supposed to have enough grocery stores so that people can get food, and the one thing I always say is poor people eat. So the business model for a grocery store isn't the same as a high-end restaurant or any of the other kinds of things that they say that can't survive in North Minneapolis, which I disagree with. But poor people do eat, and so grocery stores can survive, but you've got to wane people off of, I don't know, maybe it's the elitist model. Maybe it's reaching out with special programs for seniors, like cooking programs and those kinds of things, getting people to eat healthier and understand what that means. Although I will say, you know, fried chicken places seem to be doing quite well because there's quite a bit of those. So somebody is buying food in North Minneapolis. They're just not buying healthy food. And I think that becomes a huge cultural change that has to occur.
Okay. With that said, and in closing on my end before I pass over to Mr. Edwards, I'm going to kind of pivot on you here. The building on the corner of Penn and Plymouth, and I'm talking about the Minneapolis Urban League, has little to few programs. I know I said two things twice, the same thing. But what do you think that has stakeholders in the Black community, especially in North Minneapolis, what should we do to resurrect that building, try to get some programs, or to kind of change the trajectory of the financial woes this agency could possibly be having in their ongoing means? What do you think should we do? What should we do, in your opinion, of course?
Well, of course, it's a nonprofit organization, has a board of directors. That board of directors needs to decide what business it's in. The urban leagues were traditionally programmed. I mean, you go back to the history of the urban leagues. They were basically settlement houses. They help people, Black people migrating to the north, settle. And their programs, you know, were training programs and those kinds of programs, and they raised that money. At some point in time, and Ron probably knows this better than I do, but at some point in time, they changed and they became a more policy-driven organization, really identifying what the policy needs are of the African-American community, and then both locally and federally or nationally, creating policies, agendas, and bringing people together to work on those. You know, that's probably in the 60s. And then at some point in time, and Ron probably knows this better than I do, I think carrots got dangled in front of Black people's faces and said, you know, run this program and we'll pay you this and we'll do that. And so at some point in time, it became kind of a program-based, you know, job training and educational programs. And again, I always go back to this in my business model. It's about capacity. It's about, do you know how to do that? Do you know how to do that in a profitable way? Do you know how to do that in a way that gets the kind of results that you want? And over time, you know, I've had common contracts when I ran Women's Venture with the Urban League, and we got graded, and so you saw what everybody else's grades were on their job training programs. Mine were poor. I got dinged a couple times and had to regroup and do the programs differently and get different results. And then at some point in time, you know, this program approach that we take, this kind of cookie cutter approach that we to how we solve these big social problems like incarceration, you know, drugs and all that stuff gets crazy. It just, I mean, you know, and how do you take somebody who's been in jail for 20 years, was a, you know, a freebasing addict, and now all of a sudden he's out and now he needs a job, and he needs a job and he has to pay a certain amount of money, and he has to be able to retain that job for 6 months when he's homeless and all those other kinds of things. So it becomes impossible. The requirements for these programs become impossible to be able to deliver. And then when you don't deliver, you know, when he doesn't keep the job for 6 months and because he's homeless or whatever, then you get dinged because then they changed it to these performance-based, their performance-based accounts is what you get now from the federal government and from the state government. And they just couldn't deliver. And so I think that the Urban League's board needs to regroup and figure out what the hell it is. Is it a policy organization? If so, then scale way back, get some good lobbyists, work with whatever organizations out there, and really put forward some policies that address the issues. I just saw that ALF just pulled together a policy agenda, and they're doing that. So we've got dueling policies, a small African-American community, and we've got dueling organizations that are trying to just set policy for us. That ain't going to work. And then the second thing is, if you're going to do programs, then I think they should partner and use that building and that facility and not deliver the programs themselves, but find the organizations that are being quite successful in delivering the programs and you know, cut a deal with them for rent in that space. So that's
okay.
What I
agree. Mr. Edwards, have any question for Ms. Wells?
Oh, I think Ms. Wells's narratives were excellent. The Urban League is an example. It's too bad that the Urban League of St. Paul and then later Minneapolis, under Hightower and Gray, and then of course Belton, did not engage in that kind of dialogue with a board that had the experience and vision to walk that path. That's really too bad, particularly in light of the fact now that St. Paul has no Urban League. Minneapolis is just hanging on. There was an announcement 2.5 months ago that a new created Metropolitan Urban League of the Twin Cities is being created, and I don't know what that is. But the Urban League is really getting ready to hit rock bottom because the fifth congressional district office for the city of Minneapolis, there's also one in St. Louis Park, is pulling out. The newly elected Muslim congresswoman has indicated that she is moving her entire operation out of North Minneapolis to the Stewart neighborhood that we just talked about. And there's, again, that silence that seems to grip the African-American community in Minnesota to talk about what that means. That's basically the only income that's coming in. It was interesting to hear Ms. Wells talk in terms of some relationships and working together and et cetera, because actually on the east side of the Urban League building, which, by the way, the path of the Urban League building is owned by the city of Minneapolis, and I take you back to then state legislator Gray, who, along with organized labor, saved the Urban League and allowed it to open. That part where UROC is now doing some contractual business, have a couple little programs in there. That actually, it's interesting that part of the building is owned by the city of Minneapolis, and I refer anyone to the documentation and et cetera so that folks don't get to screaming and howling about toxic negativism and et cetera. It's just a fact. Now, with the fifth congressional office being moved, that is a tremendous hit on what additional or what present income that the Urban League can look forward to. So we have to wish them the best. Her analysis were absolutely on point. The one question I have is that I thought that the operation there, the co-op there on 10 and Golden Valley Road, really hurt themselves, because even after the developer, Deb and George, finally completed building that facility and et cetera, it took the co-op, Danae, almost an entire year before they even dusted off the shelves and started putting up whatever meager items that they had. How much do you think that they were hurt by their ability to survive based on the length that it took them to get operational?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that was the big deal. I happen to know that there was no staff. You mean you got to have somebody who knows. This is one of the things I learned with the chefs working with this Onyx people, because I don't know nothing about restaurant operations. But and I found that hurt us, and it hurt didn't hurt me, but it hurt our organization, because in business there's procedures and there's ways that you operate, and you learn that. And, you know, they were hiring. I happen to know that when they were hiring whoever was the operations manager, you know, they were just kind of on the street trying to find somebody. I know a couple of people that applied for the job that I know were not qualified. So, again, I think that not being able to get the business, this is all businesses, you have to think about all the aspects of that business, how we're going to market it, how we're going to price it, how we're going to shelf it, how we're going to get people to walk in the door, how we're going to keep customers. I mean, all of those things are extremely costly. And if you don't have the upfront cost covered, in many businesses, they will tell you, and I don't know what it is for the grocery business, but I know in the restaurant business, for example, you know, you got to really make some really good food, first and foremost. You have to really be able to make a connection with that good food with your customer base. But you've got to be able to survive for at least, you know, 6-7 months, most likely without a salary. If you're the owner of the business, you're not going to take any money out of that business. You're going to just pour money into that business. You got to hire people. You got to pay them at a certain rate. You got to get supplies on the shelf. To your point, I mean, you got to have contracts with people that are going to supply you with the food. That's why the Wedge model, which I believe is like a $68 million co-op, is one of the biggest and best co-ops over the 40 years that they've been in existence. I was an initial member of Wedge when the dogs used to pee on the fruit on the outside of the building. And they kept it out there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so over the course of free labor, think about that. The other thing with those other co-ops is the memberships initially give you free labor. So you don't have to pay anybody a salary. So you've got to be able to build that structure to be able to operate the business. And if you can't build it, then the business is going to fail. I mean, you know, we, no matter how committed we are, and this is true for nonprofits. This is, I'm a social entrepreneur, and so I look at this stuff all the time. The deal is not our commitment. We are so committed. We want to make this work, but there's only 24 hours in a day. You got to sleep sometimes. You got to eat sometimes. You got to pay your bills. You got to do all this other stuff while you're trying to get this business off the ground. And if you don't have labor and access to credit so you can buy the food, to sell the food, it just doesn't work.
All right, let me ask this question. This will be my final question, and I certainly appreciate Mrs.
Don, I have a question for you first, though. I mean, Ron, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Urban League building fully capitalized? Didn't they raise all the money so all
No, unfortunately, under the leadership of the people that were there, if the question is the presence of Mr. Edwards, I had long gone from the Urban League, and it was not capitalized, and consequently the archives and records of the Minnesota legislature and the city of Minneapolis show that they had to come to the rescue. And that at that time, Representative Gray, not to be confused with the gentleman that was the executive director there for a short period of time, a year and a half ago, who got out of town and relocated to Atlanta, is that if it had not been for Representative Gray, the late Dave Rowe, the head of the AFL-CIO, and members of the Minnesota legislature, the building was not going to open because the builder was not going to release them from their obligation and was getting ready to place a lien waiver on the facility. And so folks tried to kind of keep that quiet. Hightower, Gary Sutter, unfortunately, had to come ill later, passed, as we all remember. Hightower was brought in from City Inc. and the YWCA. They were not able to raise the capital, if you will, and the state of Minnesota and the city of Minneapolis had to step in and save that organization and allow it to open. Now, that brings me to the question I was going to ask you as the final. What opinion, if any, do you have with regards to the collapse of Thorpe Construction?
Well, I've just been learning about that from you all. it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter how big the number is. It's the same thing. If you don't have the resources and the access, and they got cut off from their ability to be able to get federal public sector money because they screwed it up in Haiti. I thought they also did some stuff in Vegas, but I'm not sure about that.
They lost a franchise in Vegas also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so, I mean, if you lose money there and there's nobody to back you, that's what happens. And so I find amusing in the Thor story is how the one thing that I think that I tell business owners when I'm consulting with them is they've, at some point in time, you know, and Ron, you know this, everything that's in the dark is going to come to the light. And so the better thing to do is to strategize what's going to happen when it's going to come to the light. And it's really important to be honest. And so for them to act like that was a big foo-foo thing that they did and they opened that building, you know, and I knew at that time, you know, that Target was in there and that. Did they use the Target money that was promised to the North Side, did that end up going to Thor?
No. Thor never really got anything. The county, the city of Minneapolis.
No, remember the money that was sitting in the Minneapolis Foundation when Target closed and the community went up, and that money never got spent, you know.
You're talking about when Target closed the store on West Broadway.
Yeah. And that money sat in the Minneapolis Foundation in the bank account. It lost some money in 2008, but I heard it came back. And so I was like, where did Target get this money?
Well, here's what's getting ready to happen tonight, is that with the lawsuit, $3 million filed by Sunrise Bank a week ago yesterday, and with that getting ready to go to trial, and with the court, I think the court may have already ruled on the motion for receivership to appoint a special master and to take total and absolute control of the facility and of Thor as a operating corporation in the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
I think you're going to have a lot of surprises.
Wow.
I think folks got to do a lot of explaining. By the way, on that particular note, you know, the move that representatives of Thor attempted to make this past week to position themselves to receive money on the upper Mississippi dam and et cetera that was blocked by the Minneapolis City Council on Tuesday afternoon. And an order went out from the City Council that the different committees, or in this case, the different departments of the city, bring back within 2 weeks a well-crafted report about what happened and how it happened and where is the money, and a full explanation on the conditions and allegations that Sunrise has made, Sunrise being former Franklin National Bank, under the respected Dorothy Bridges, I think that you'll be able to go back to Florida and et cetera and really enjoy the sun because it's going to be hot up here. I would suggest
wow.
that for those naysayers and say that we should not report accurately and truthfully the news, I think the motions being filed in the Hennepin County District Court and the Ramsey County District Court are something people need to take a look at because it is a shame. You're going back in history into the archives with regards to that little piece of money that was over there in the foundation. That is a good question. What happened to it? You know, we already know we had $3 million that was supposed to go for the Colored People's Museum that never did happen. And we're not supposed to talk about that. And that was wrong, but that was a clear signal that there was big problems. And the Haitian thing is, and obviously you certainly have been listening to the Don and Ron program. That was $18 million that just disappeared.
Wow.
From four. And another $13 million from a company that they put together and was a pastor. We had a caller last Saturday morning that really ranted and raved about the fact that poor for 40 years has been a pastor. And, you know, people get uneasy. They, you know, they look like they scratch it and carry it on. But, you know, there's going to be an explanation. With this lawsuit by Sunrise Bank suing for $3 million and asking that poor all assets be placed in receivership. You know, some folks, as you know tonight, some folks could lose not only them, you know, Cadillacs and et cetera, they could lose their houses.
They all drive Escalades.
Yes. Yes. You know, thank God for General Motors. But let me turn you back over to Don. Good hearing your voice.
Yes.
Go ahead, Ms. Allen. You can complete it.
Yeah, oh, tonight, we'd like to thank you for calling in and speaking with us this morning, and it's always a great pleasure to hear your voice. You have fun down there where you're at in the warm weather, and you probably don't want to come back to Minnesota till like, next week. So,
yeah, I'm not coming
back.
While
we make it March. Yes.
March or April.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank
all right.
you for your time.
You guys
right.
do
thank
good.
You. All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Edwards.
Mr. Allen,
you know,
I don't know if we got any calls holding. Anyone has any specific questions?
I think we do.
That was
I
a half
we
hour.
Do. We have some people that are holding and listening, but I'd just like to give out that number one more time, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Standard rate and charges apply. Don't be trying to charge us. Let's see who we have on the line here. Caller, 7935, you're live on the air. Do you have a question, comment? Or would you like to listen in the queue? It looks like a listen in the queue, Mr. Edwards. Let's try this next person here. Caller, last 4-4-6-1-6, do you have a comment or would you like to ask us a question? Hello, caller. Yes, you're live.
Oh my goodness. I didn't expect that. I was glad that everything was, you know, as far as what you know about what's going on over there at Thor and the Sunlight Bank, I was glad that you're able to enlighten the community because of things that are not being told to the community. And then the people that know about what's going on, they want to cover it up. So I think it's good that we're able to find out some factors on what has been going on there. And it is mind-blowing that these things are still occurring and that the manner of which they're occurring are in the same manner as how everything else gets stepped away from the black community.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. Yes. All right. Any specific question? We thank you for your observation because there has been a demand from some that there be silence on this, and I just don't understand that. You know what I mean? Because you know, folks have made a lot of money off the conditions and in some cases the poverty and the hardship of the African-American community. Yeah. And you know, I just think they should step forward, step up,
yeah,
explain what happened. Yeah. After what happened Tuesday in the Minneapolis City Council, where apparently the former operatives of Floor thought that they were going to get a nice big contract for the upper Mississippi reservoir, quote unquote. And man, I tell you, I guess led by Vice President, Council President Jenkins, who really raised some questions that the staff, which of course is white, were not able to answer. And the City Council said, well, the motion is not going to go through, contract will not be signed, and that in 2 weeks, city officials are to come back with a full explanation about what the heck is going on here and all these dummy corporations that are emerging in which these people are tied to. So we appreciate your observation. Community has a right to know, but thank you.
That's right.
Mr. Allen, any questions on this call?
Right. Oh, no.
Thank
gonna,
you.
I'll put her back in the queue so she could listen. She's back in the queue. But, Mr. Edwards, one thing, let's move forward, but one thing on this I have to say, I was listening to a community radio station here in the Twin Cities on Sunday. They didn't name us specifically, but they said that we were beating up and attacking Thor and throwing these black people, and that we were happy and proud that this has happened. And I'd just like to let our listeners know that that is so far from the truth. I think as journalists on this radio show that have been going.
I was sad by that. That was a attack that was without merit. On this program, if you will. But, you know, sometimes you reap what you sow, and when you get to talking in terms of bad people on the other side, you may fool around and open the history pages of your own quote-unquote pinchers, if you know what I mean. But I just leave it alone. I've heard references that we're beating up, but that we're toxic, that information should not be provided to the community and et cetera. And I'm just troubled by that because, you know, 36 people lost their jobs, which we only had for a month, at that facility in North Minneapolis, lost their jobs. You know, a majority of them were African-American females with children and et cetera. No one said nothing about that. Then no one seemed to get upset about that. So, you know, I understand that it's being said, you know, if they're really upset with who's passing the information out, other than the fact that we broke the story over a year ago, they need, you know, they need to go call Glenn Taylor, you know, the man who owns the Star Tribune, owns the Minnesota Timberwolves, and owns a multi-billion-dollar corporation down there in Mankato. Maybe get in the car, drive down to Mankato, go to his Taylor Enterprises in Mankato, and just tell him what they think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we don't, you know, it's really funny because I know Robbie Norman, and he's always been supportive on the internet marketing, the digital marketing, and people in our community, in the black community, understanding this new social media and this internet stuff. And whenever he would speak, he would always say that to people. He says, in the black community, we got to get up to speed with this technology because we're years behind. Even our children are years behind. And we need to use this to access wealth for us, like the other communities do. And that has been, and whenever I heard him say that, I would go up and say, hey, dude, that was right on point. I personally appreciated that. I am not proud or anything like that. But we have a friend of the show who's going to come in live now, Mr. Edwards, that was holding for a minute. A caller.
Go ahead, bring him on.
Go ahead. You're live
Hello?
On the air, sir. Yes,
Hello?
Sir. You're live on the air. Yes.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing great. How are you, sir?
Real good, sir. All right.
Really well. Hey, guys. Don't try to hide your hands, all right? And let me just be straight up with you, no chaser. Businesses have business problems all the time. If you read Finance and Commerce, they're white businesses in bankruptcy every day. Every day. The government steps in and bails people out. These are facts. Nothing to be celebrated or gossiped about or every other sentence speculating, saying I think. That's not journalism, and as I pointed out to someone, it's entertainment. Moving on. About Sunrise. Ask Billy Russell about Sunrise. Ask Earl Miller about Sunrise. Ask the people from the City Inc. about Sunrise. Don't speculate. Go get some facts about these people and how they do business in the black community. Final thing. We need to also remember it was Thor that had 60 and 70% minority participation, meaning they're putting black people to work in a way that the white companies don't. So they built more than businesses. And finally, when Progressive Baptist Church was in trouble, and everybody knows this, they stepped up with the money, took the risk. So what I think needs to happen here, and maybe being astute, intelligent people that you are, and by the way, quit listening to people who've been fired from every job they ever had. But listen, what we should be doing is rallying around this community asset, because they build more than buildings. They build people. They put people to work on the Urban League headquarters, on Summit Academy, on the stadium, and countless others. And they give minority contractors a shot. So I guess to sum it up, white businesses go through this all the time. It's not that big of a deal. No, period. I know the boy that's getting a deal up at the ammo dump in Arden Hills, he's been through bankruptcy twice. That's a fact. The Hoyt boy's been through bankruptcy, still doing deals. So this is just business. That's all it is. And I encourage you to join the rest of the community and the financial backers who are about to step up. And let's continue the work we were doing. I respect you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. King. Was that inspirational to you, Don? Did you feel a sense of inspiration?
I was touched. In the name, I was touched. And it's really funny because, you know, he takes it for granted that we don't understand that businesses go under every day, that businesses have challenges and issues every day. We're fully aware of that. But those white businesses, thousands that open in Minnesota every week, don't celebrate that they're going to be in the middle of this black community, that they're going to do this, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to make it better. And they answer questions. The problem is, like Ms. Wells was saying, is that everything's kept in silence. And that last caller, no one wants to tell us anything. Everything is quiet. We're not beating up Thor. We have facts. I know about Sunrise Bank, about Franklin Bank, and the relationship with City Inc. I went through that in detail. I walked down to Sunrise Bank, and the brother that was running it was telling me what was going on, you know, with the City Inc. and them wanting money and et cetera, et cetera. Matter of fact, in January 5th, I think it was 2012 or 2013, we stopped another agency from going and joining City Inc. because this young woman was not aware that they were shut down. She's getting ready to sign over a fat check and collaborate with them and had no idea. Matter of fact, Mr. Edwards, she was talking to us on a conference line. She hung up to go make some calls to stop whatever she had in motion. You know, and that's because it wasn't being talked about. You know, so we talk about this. We deliver the news. We broke the story over a year ago, and we're not beating up Thor. I would rather be talking about how successful they are, and they did get those 7,000 people jobs in North Minneapolis to curb the unemployment rate. But it's not happening, so we deserve the right to speak on it. And those of the naysayers and people on public radio shows that barely have 100 people listening need to get their act together and understand that this is important communication. None of our black newspapers wrote a speck about any of this, not negative, not positive, nothing. So, again, we go on with that's our biggest problem. We don't have the information.
I mean, nothing to say. Like I said, I listened to the criticism, if you will, the articulation of what that person's perception was of what was happening. If that's what they choose to label us with, now don't get upset now, Les, because this same person that called, we hadn't heard from this person in a couple of years, by the way, was the same person that was, you know, crying and whining about the fact of statements that we were making about 3 or 4 years ago on some business ventures that they were involved in, and et cetera. But, you know, we've attempted to merely bring forward the news. Now, I got to tell you, my brother, is that there is some news that we have made an agreement really not to bring to the public's attention because of how vile it was and the allegations that were being made against the person in question with regards to misconduct of a egregious nature, if you will. But we'll just leave that alone. But, you know,
yeah.
The thing that I'd like to say is let's all make sure that the children of the Twin Cities are safe. All right, Don, you got a call? Let's get it.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Yes, caller, last 7348. Looks like a friend of the show, Mr. M. You're live on the air.
Well, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are
what
you?
Can we do for you, sir?
Mm-hmm. Well, very interesting program. You know, it's really good to get points and counterpoints, and I think it's really great that you guys are open to, you know, let's talk about this. But my question is, and I don't want to continue too much on the Thor thing, but my question is there still a museum in existence? I believe it was housed in the Thor building, and I ask because there have been some people who have contacted me about doing something, and I'm a little leery of I just don't know the status of it. I just wonder if you guys had any updates
on
it.
I would have to indicate that probably the last caller, you know, would have been one that could have answered that. My understanding is that there is no museum, but if not for that one, I'm quite sure we can find a way to reinvest in the one that we thought we were going to have until it came up $3 million short. Now, we're not supposed to talk about that. But there was a museum that was located right behind the convention center in downtown Minneapolis, and everyone was anticipating its introduction, if you will, et cetera. And then it never happened. The doors closed. There's a little house just behind it, and some of the people's artifacts were put in there. I guess it's still there. So I, to your question, M, I don't know. I don't know. I was told by sources that, and in court documents that have been filed in Hennepin County, you know, folks are always welcome to go down to Hennepin County, except for those that have warrants against them. But anyway, if folks are interested in what is happening, and now I'll tell you what is still in there, sir. And that is the Hennepin County building there, and I'm trying to figure out what Target's overall role is, if you will. But the museum, not to be confused with the museum that was founded by a young lady who was at one time married to the chief operations officer of Thor, I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I think that's a doggone good question.
Well, you know, it's such an interesting, you know, I mean, trail. The same names tend to come up, either husbands or ex-husbands. And, I mean, the same names still seem to come up behind what ends up being a pot of missing funds or funds that are earmarked. And I think that there's a lot of incentives to earmark funds for areas like the North Side. I think federal monies, I think things are designated, but it never seems to really stick. Never really seems to. It just becomes fly by night continually. But the same people. This is what really is my observation as an outsider. Same names. I mean, mayor's husband, cousins. I mean, I don't know. But I was told that the museum, they wanted something from me and that they had a lease, but they didn't really, it was very vague. They didn't say who they had assigned a 2-year lease with somebody.
Well, I think now, with regards to that lease, and we were certainly sad that the caller that called in to you know, chastise us and get our minds right, you know, failed to mention the individuals who lost their jobs in the last 2 weeks. I had a very high level public official talked to me 2 days ago, and they were shocked because they had been talking to a young lady who at that company for, and they were negotiating some things, and this high, very, very high-ranking public official called back 4 days later, and, you know, somebody, I don't know who it was, indicated to them that the person, an African-American woman, no longer worked there. And so, I'm just trying to understand the collapse of an institution that was, supposedly being reinforced by, $40 million in assets from any number of entities, et cetera. But I'm quite sure now with the matter being in court, and maybe some of the people that are talking about Sunrise, and God help them if they're talking about Franklin, will come in and, give testimony in support of the oopsie-daisy, the forfeiture of those that had loans and et cetera with Franklin / later Sunrise that never got their money. But we're not, we're not supposed to talk about that.
Well, I appreciate the update. I guess what I think I'll just observe and possibly just keep my distance for the time being until we see, because it looks like there's some smoke, and we'll have to wait until this smoke clears to really see where we're at. So,
I think that is a sound decision and a good strategy. All right, thank you, sir.
All right, I'll keep listening.
Thank you for the call.
Right.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Let's see if we have some other people here on hold. Stand by. Caller, last 4, 1840. Do you have any comments, questions, concerns?
Yes, I have some comments. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Great, sir.
Real good, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm here in the coffee shop in Rogers Park, Illinois, and a Muslim brother just came up to me, and he showed me some footage in a phone, and it was a young lady protesting in front of Mr. Louis King's restaurant, and it had something to do with her son being molested by that gentleman. Now, maybe that gentleman can call back and expound on why that issue isn't a topic in history.
Wait a minute. I want to make sure that we are actually correct. We don't want anyone to say we're slandering anyone. You say that there is a video of a person who appears to be a mother protesting and making, she actually had a sign that made these allegations. And what were they
against?
That's
correct. That is correct. Mr. Louis King, she was out in front of, I believe that's his restaurant over by the lake, I believe it is. You guys got, he's got the restaurant over there?
The lake, yes.
And the sign states clearly that she wants some type of justice for her son being molested by Mr. King. Maybe he can call in and maybe expound on that. I'd like to know what's going on with that situation, because he doesn't have room to expound on situations where his company, his name, and his business, as the gentleman just called before stating, the same names keep popping up. His name pops up a lot of times. But I just would like to know, how do you become a child molester, and then you turn around and call the show and act as if though everybody's supposed to take a back seat and you're not up to par with your behavior as a businessman.
Now, I want to be sure we're correct, sir. You say you're calling from Rogers Park, Illinois. That is just outside of Chicago?
That is correct. And we're all sitting here in the coffee shop, and I think there are some people that just went in the back room and threw up their bagels and their donuts. They don't understand what's really going on up there in Minnesota. I mean, are these the type of people that you all have in leadership positions where they can do their little dirty deeds, cry, bitch, and moan for money, and then when they don't get it, they have the audacity to call the show and act as if though you guys don't know what's going on? You gentlemen have been out in the forefront for years. I believe you broke the story on Thor some years ago, but I guess things fall on deaf ears up there. What's going on? I mean, I'm appalled.
Yes, well, sir, we would hope that the person that you name will certainly call in, but we would also make the offer to the woman. And you say this has gone viral?
Yes, it is.
Sometimes.
I mean, these are people that's wondering, you got the congressman / attorney general. I believe these are friends of his. I mean, what's going on? I mean, is that some kind of thievery corporation going on up there or what? Because every time there's money being allocated to the black community, it goes from one direction into the hands of, those people you said that the young lady stated, they buy Escalades and all these fancy cars. I mean, what's going on up there?
Well, you raise an interesting question, and of course we're beginning, but we will certainly and our phone lines, as Mr. Allen has said, my associate, our phone lines are always open. We appreciate what him just said, that we encourage the debate and the reflections and et cetera. In fact, I'm going to make sure that we follow closely the proceedings in both Hennepin County and Ramsey County in the court. Because, hey, that's the way, because what will happen is that people will be called in, put under oath to testify.
I mean, for the love of Jesus, I'd like for that gentleman to call back and expound on some of his malfeasance issues. I mean, maybe he can come a little clean today because, you know, the gentleman that's sitting here, they said that he hasn't called the show in maybe like 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah. Oh, well, Mr. Allen and I will stay silent on that.
If you like,
right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Feel free to call in from Rogers Park, Illinois. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And sir, if you'd like to email that video, I would be glad to post the video on our show page. And you can email it to ibnnnews@gmail.com. Again, that's ibnnnnews@gmail.com. And I will be glad to contact this gentleman, send him the video, and ask him to come on the air next Saturday and speak about it. And that's if I get the video, I would be glad to do that.
I think that's absolutely fair. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And also,
and sometimes you open up a lot of Pandora's boxes, you know what I mean? So folks need to kind of be careful when they get, you know, but there's so much money at play. But, you know, it's like I said, it's good that Sunrise and others, and I've heard the names of some churches. You know, one thing about our people, black Americans, a lot of church folks, they like to gossip and such. They don't like for you to talk about their church and their minister. And I wondered if that program last Sunday and these statements just made by Mr. King, I wondered that they kind of pushed the red line a little too far, if you know what I mean, Don.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree with you 100%, Mr. Edwards. Yeah, I was just kind of set back, you know, last week, like I told you when I was listening to this show, and I just can't believe the audacity. And now we know where that person got the information from on the churches that they read across the air that Thor is helping. Yeah, that's good that Thor is helping people. That's wonderful. That's a beautiful thing. But we're not here. We're not proud of this. I'm a little bit set back because I thought that would be a nice incubator hub for small businesses, not just construction, but other businesses. You know, but you have to show success. You have to show ownership. It's just like the building down there on the corner of Penn and Broadway. You know, we had the Center for Communication and Development is supposed to own that building, and they basically put the money in someone else's hands, and they're renters. So our community has yet to show a model of ownership, which is what you need in the black community to have the business acumen. We have a couple more calls. I don't know if they're holding the queue. We have about 2 minutes left.
How much time do we have left? Because we don't want to cut anybody off. How much time do we have left?
They
can get in a minute time. Go ahead, Don. Go ahead.
Yep. Caller 7935. Do you have any comments or questions? Okay, they're in the queue. And let's try this other one. Caller 4616. 4616 is your last four. Do you have any comments or questions? Okay, they're in the queue also. They don't. All right. Yeah, we have about 90 seconds left on the show, Mr. Edwards.
Let James Brown take us on in the quest for truth. In the quest for truth. My man, James Brown.
Thank you.